This is Triad Arts Weekend, where we do our darndest to keep you in the know about arts happenings in our area and the wonderful artists and arts organizers who make it all happen. We'll be singing the blues with two of them today, Music Maker co-founder Timothy Duffy and Delta Arts Center Executive Director Nadia Quander, a little later on in the show. But first, we pay tribute to a local performance organizer who's celebrating the arrival of one of the Triad's newest, oldest performance venues. Over the past couple of years, the Muddy Creek Cafe in Bethania has been attracting musicians from indie rock bands to folk singers. They typically perform on the porch there at the century-old renovated former mill house during the summer months. Owner Shauna Whitehead says the popularity of these free, casual evening concerts eventually meant having to turn folks away due to lack of space. Well, no longer. The historic Muddy Creek Cafe has now expanded to include the Muddy Creek Music Hall in the adjoining building. Sean is joined by lifelong musician Bill Heath, lead singer for the Muddy Creek Players, and his band Bill's Fault. We're sampling from their new album, Present Elusive.
Ways of expanding, but we are in a historic building and we certainly can't knock down a wall, so we kind of toyed with lots of different ideas over the winter, and finally were approached by the owner of the Bethania Mill, and he said, well, what about taking over one of these retail spaces? We looked at it, we talked about it, and we thought, you know, this could be a really great fit for us. It's right next door, it's a beautiful space, and it would really allow us to expand the music.
Nice.
And it was a really nice way for us to offer music later into the evening, and also accommodate more musicians who've been asking to play at the Muddy Creek Cafe. So Bill really kind of designed the music hall.
What are your big concerns going in from the design end?
Acoustics was probably the first concern as far as basically how loud things needed to be and how to sort of contain them. But surprisingly, the first band we had there, we didn't even have our stage built yet, and they were a five-piece bluegrass group of professional musicians, and it sounded phenomenal. We didn't put any baffling, we didn't do anything, and it was just amazing. The wood in there is from around 1890, and it's all different kinds of wood, so it just naturally sounded amazing. And when we had Jody King, who was our monthly bluegrass showcase host, brought a spectrum analyzer down, and we only found two frequencies that gave us any issues at all, so...
Let me pick up there for the non-acoustician. When you're talking about frequencies like that, let's get a little wonky. How do you isolate that particular frequency? How does that machine work?
Basically, every room has sound issues. You know, like one room might have too much echo, one room's too flat, you need reverb. So it's not common that you come across a room that basically doesn't need some form of conditioning, you know, to some degree. Now, there are a few things that, you know, we probably could work on, but basically when that room's full of people, it just naturally has just a great organic acoustic sound.
Before the audience is there, it might be a little reverby, but then you bring in those bodies and they absorb some of the sound and it makes it just a little more tight, more focused.
Mm-hmm, it does, and I mean, that room is not designed for a heavy metal band. I mean, they would just be too loud. It's not what you call a forgiving room. If you hit a bad note, it's going to jump right out, so, you know, but the level of musicians that we have in there, bad notes are not really in their forte.
It's not allowed. No bad notes.
That's right.
Bill, tell me about how do you address that issue note, or the frequencies, rather, that were, I guess, more in the noise realm or a problem?
Basically with an equalizer. You just EQ out. The way the device works is you turn your volume on your amplifier and your mixer way up, and then when you start to hear, it'll start to feedback, and it'll pick up what frequency it's feeding back, and then you just adjust your equalizer. It'll tell you what band it is, you know, on a 30-band EQ, and you'll be able to just pull that fader down, and it'll go away, and then you turn it up louder. And then it starts to feed back again. And, you know, usually Jody was saying it's like it happens several times, but it was two of them. We had two frequencies, which is just a good indication that it's, you know, going to be a good sounding room.
So you've got this great space, and then in terms of what kind of music to play, how frequently to do it, all that stuff, that's a whole other area of planning that you got to get into. Kick it off with this weekly traditional jazz night.
Jason McKinney is a local musician extraordinaire, and his wife is in a band called Karen Click and the Hot Licks, and they had played a show out there, and I was talking to some of the musicians in that group as they were setting up, and I said, you know, hey, you know, we do an open mic on Thursdays with Country Dan Collins, and it's more folk, rock, Americana, and that kind of stuff in country. And, you know, I said, you know, it'd be nice to do a jazz open mic, but I couldn't really see the two of them really working, you know, at the same time. So I was talking to some of their musicians in the band, and after the show, Jason approached me and said, hey, you know, I'd like to do a traditional jazz night, which is, you know, old standards. So we just gave it a shot, and once we opened the hall, it was just a natural fit in there. I mean, we have some just amazing musicians that come in there on Monday nights, and you know, right now it's sort of a secret. Nobody really knows about it, and so it's phenomenal. It really is. The musicians and the music they play, I mean, it'll just have you clapping right along and singing right along, and it's just great.
So it's like the Muddy Creek Music Hall House Band every Monday night.
They're called the Salem Stompers.
The Salem Stompers. Love it. And that's not like an open mic thing or jam session. It's more they sit down and perform for us.
It's a traditional jazz, but it is an open mic, and musicians are welcome. We just really haven't networked to this point yet with that group of musicians that play that. You know, traditional is a lot different. A lot of jazz players, you know, would rather do the more contemporary, progressive type of jazz. So this is more laid back, you know, like Down by the Riverside, you know, old standards that, you know, it's just a different approach.
Give me a hint of some of the variety of music you've had out there at Muddy Creek over the years. Sean?
We've had a lot of local bands, everything from lots of bluegrass, blues, indie rock, but we've also had a lot of bands who are maybe traveling through the area and are looking for a place to stop and play. So we've been able to accommodate bands like that over the years as well. But with the new music hall, we can accommodate much more music. And we've been approached by a lot of bands who they might be touring in the South and they need a place to play on a weeknight or a Sunday evening that we wouldn't normally have music at the Muddy Creek Cafe, so we can accommodate them in the music hall. So that's really allowed us to expand the music offerings. And some of the bands that have played at the cafe over the years will be playing at the Muddy Creek Music Hall as well. Mm-hmm. And our singer-songwriter night, a lot of the musicians have played at the cafe are also songwriters, and we can showcase some of their songwriting, some of their original music in the music hall on our Wednesday night program.
And then while we're there, we're listening to great music and, well, maybe working up an appetite or a thirst.
Yes.
There's plenty going on there.
Absolutely. We do have beer and wine in the music hall, and we have some food available, and a lot of customers will order from the cafe, and we can bring the sandwiches and food over there. We have lots of great desserts and salads and soups and sometimes gumbo on our jazz nights.
Oh, how about that? A little New Orleans gumbo.
Yeah, and see, our concept is basically that the way we're set up is on Friday and Saturday nights, we have music on our porch at 7 o'clock. And it's free. It's the bands play for tips and for food. So basically, you know, you could come out and have dinner and on the porch and enjoy some good music and tip the band as you deem accordingly. And then you can go inside and for $10, $15, you can catch a national touring act, you know, in an intimate setting. And it's a destination somewhere you can go and have a full night of music and great food. And there's kids running around. It's a family atmosphere. It's, you know, it's really unique in that regard.
Just being on that porch and walking up to Muddy Creek Cafe, and it's very comfortable and it's unique. It feels like you're back in a different day and age. It really transports you.
Yes, and we're really not that far from downtown. We're only 10 minutes from Wake Forest, but you really do feel like you're kind of out in the country a little bit. And it's very pretty out there with the flowers and the trees and the creeks and lots of trails in that area.
So we've kind of approached this from the audience perspective, Bill, thinking in terms of what it's like up there on stage. What are you hearing? What's the vibe like for the musician?
You know, when I set the room up, half of my thoughts were as a listener and half was as a performer. And the first thing I wanted to do was to make the performer feel like that, you know, they're being thought about. And so when they get there, there's a private parking area for them. There's a private entrance. There's a private unloading room, also a green room. Of course, you know, we accommodate them. Also make sure when they get there, I say, you know, would you like something to eat? You know, really just treat them like they're special. And I mean, that's talent is special. So I want them to feel special. So the stage itself, the lighting is very intimate. The walkway, we had issues at first. So the whole thing is sort of growing. It's an evolution. We had issues with people coming in, and the artists felt like when the people were walking in the room that, you know, they were sort of being intruded upon on stage. So I put up a sort of a barrier so that when you walk in, you know, you don't even see the stage. So, and the artist feels more secluded and more intimate. And the feedback I've gotten has really just been nothing beyond spectacular. I mean, every artist that's come in there has really just loved the sound and the feel and the environment, and they all want to come back.
And I know one of those bands is Bill's Fault.
Yes.
And got to ask Bill, you've been asked this many times, I'm sure, in your thousands of interviews throughout the triad, but great name. How did you come up with it?
Well, each band member, there's four of us, the core of us, and each one of us has Bill in our name somewhere. And naming a band can be painful. And after a few months, I just sort of said, look, guys, when you come up with something, let me know. Because I threw up every idea, that I could. And we're a democracy in that band. There is no one person. I mean, we all have veto power over an issue, but we all have to agree. So, I think it was our bass player, Bill Porter, he said, whenever somebody messes up, we always say, well, it's Bill's fault. So, it stuck. And, that's where it came from.
That's a great story. Yeah, coming up with a name for a band has broken up many a band.
Oh, yeah.
It started. You all have such a great variety of styles and sounds coming out of this band. Who are some of your biggest influences, musically speaking?
Well, Led Zeppelin is really what I gauge the caliber of music off of.
Hey, what is it about that band?
They just set a new precedence in rock and roll when they came out. I mean, they were a heavy blues band, and then all of a sudden, Zeppelin III comes out, and they're a folk band. Stairway to Heaven album, Zoso. Their versatility is just amazing, and their power, and their... they had the imagery. They were the epitome of what a rock band should be, and the timing of them. There will never be another Led Zeppelin. Even if there was I'm sure there's equally talented musicians that's come and gone since then. But just all of it put together, they were the perfect storm. And they impacted me. The first time I heard, I was telling her we were listening to Zeppelin III on the way home from Boone a couple of weeks ago, and like Immigrant Song. The first time I heard that song, it just scared me. I was just like, wow, what is this? We are your overlords. It just, who says that in a song? So, they were just amazing. Plant and Page's chemistry of songwriting. I really try to model my songs, just try to be crafty as a songwriter. Don't repeat words, little things that they did well that, were hidden that, you have to really break it down. But they were just masterful songwriters.
Well, some of that comes out in your writing as well. And I'm looking at In the Same Places, an original.
It's about quantum physics.
I wondered if it's about quantum physics. Yeah, I had a feeling.
Yeah, okay.
Beyond the quantum physics, though, a catchy tune. Were you in on the writing of this one?
Yeah. I write all the material for us. And I bring the material in about 60% done. And then we'll arrange the songs. And that gives each player an ownership of the material, And with the band, it's our songs, And I want them to feel like... that they've written a song with me, and that's really how they, we had a practice last night, and I introduced a new song to them, and it was about 60% done. I played it for her before I left. I said, hey, check this song out, and then I went to practice.
It's a great song.
And if I would have played it when I got back, she would have been like, is that the same song? Because, we arranged it. That's really, it's a good way to do it. It makes everybody feel like they're an equal part in the process. In the same place as it came about, I watched a documentary on quantum physics, and it talked about they were in some college, I'm not sure where, somewhere out in the Midwest, in a high-def microscope, they took a particle, and it was in two places at one time. So I thought, that'd be a cool concept, but it probably comes across as some kind of relationship song, but it's really about quantum physics.
Good old rock and roll to some degree, but with a really funky little bass line there from Bill Porter.
Oh, yeah, Bill Porter is a... He's just a monster on the bass, and a great guy too, a great character. He'll keep you laughing. He's always got a joke up his sleeve.
And The Weight was another great one. So many things fell into place right where you are. That's a nice short way of saying something pretty special.
Yeah, actually, that's from my Carl Jung, I guess, readings of Synchronicity, and things fall into place where you are. Whether you're aware of them or not, it's happening. No star.
Well, which aspect of songwriting interests you most, Bill?
To be crafty, and to try to, I'm not a storyteller. It's Dan Dockery is a local songwriter, and he is head of a local Nashville Songwriters Association, and they meet out there now at the Music Hall once a month. And I sort of just was a fly on the wall at their first one, and I was watching the process, and they'll take a song and they'll play it and they'll talk about it, and as the performer's playing, everybody else is sort of taking notes, and they really open themselves up. It's like, here's a dagger and here's my heart, what are you going to do? And to be honest, it was scary, because I was like, geez, I don't even know what I'm writing about, because I don't write, like, I don't sit down and write a song about an old man or something. I just write whatever comes out. So I told Dan that, and Dan was like, well, just give us a song and we'll tell you what it's about. So I was like, well, I don't know. I'm not sure if I want to do that or not.
Maybe I don't want to know.
Exactly.
When you say get crafty, you mean that in the best sense of the word. I mean, just analyzing the craft and getting into the minutiae of it. But yet at the same time, you're not, at least lyrically speaking, setting out to tell some great missive.
Exactly. It's like, well, going back to Led Zeppelin, you know, like Gallows Pole. I mean, you know, that's obviously about a guy who's trying to get the hangman, not to hang him, you know, and his friends are coming. But, you know, it's like, I mean, I don't think you have to sit and write about a topic. You know, you can create a topic just by how you feel. And if you can convey like how you feel, and it's not like, you know, it's more of a shared thing. And that's really my concept. And it's like Rain Song, like one of the lines that he says in it, he says, I curse the gloom that's set upon us. And the song, The Weight, is sort of talking in a sense about that kind of, but my thing is like, you know, feel the loving light upon your face instead of cursing the gloom, feel the love, you know. So it's the same thing, but, you know, it's just in my conveyance of it.
Well, Bill and Shauna, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you.
Shauna Whitehead and Bill Heath. In addition to the music, Muddy Creek Cafe and Music Hall's Art and Soul event, celebrating women in the arts, is on June 28th. You'll find lots of local art hanging in the cafe year-round, and Art and Soul will bring the artists together to mingle with the public. The event ends with a performance in the Music Hall by the indie duo The Von Strantz. Every Sunday at 11, you'll find sound therapy offerings with crystal bowls and chimes. And starting this fall, look out for the Muddy Creek Cafe and Music Hall Brunch. You'll find links to more at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Did you know that the Piedmont Triad has been a fertile crossroads for blues, jazz, old-time bluegrass, and Native American music for generations? Well, historian, producer, musician Timothy Duffy and his organization Music Maker has been preserving these great traditions for decades, and he's here to share. Eddie and Bethany will join me later on in the show for our Triad to-do picks this week, and photographer William Christenberry takes me on a gallery stroll at Rinalda House next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend, photography that captures the passage of Father Time. Blues music as collected and shared by one of the most knowledgeable music historians around, and Triad to Do are all coming up on this half of the show. We begin here. Starting in July, Delta Arts Center presents the We Are the Music Makers photography exhibit. It'll feature photo and audio documentation of Southern Roots musicians and their music as collected by award-winning musician, historian, and producer Timothy Duffy. He co-founded Music Maker in 1994 to assist traditional musicians in need, and along the way, he's worked with audio pioneer Mark Levinson and enlisted the support of luminaries such as Eric Clapton, B.B. King, and Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. Tim's success with Music Maker has been mirrored by his work as producer and manager. In 2006, after seeing the Carolina Chocolate Drops in concert, he signed a management deal with the group, released their debut record, and 4 years later, the Drops won a Grammy for Best Traditional Folk Album. That album, on the Nonesuch Records label, was titled Genuine Negro Jig. Tim spoke with me from his home in Raleigh-Durham. He's joined by Delta Arts Center Executive Director Nadia Quander, who sets the scene for the Delta exhibit We Are the Music Makers.
Oh, kiss. Sure put my death be. Oh, I love. I'm gonna leave you running. Call walking road.
I think that the humanitarian element that Music Makers Relief Foundation brings to art and this sense that they have the value of an artist and really being a champion for artists. And I think that's something that will resonate with visual artists who are trying to make a living, musicians. It will just resonate for a lot of people. And the Music Makers Relief Foundation is just doing something really special that I've not seen before. Helping tell these stories is a great benefit to our community. Some of the musicians that will be featured in the photography live in walking distance of the Delta Arts Center. There's a great sense of pride to be able to show these important people in the community in a different light than you may see them. They may be people you bump into on the street often, but you don't know their music. You don't know their song, their story. And so now we're going to have an opportunity to put them on the walls, to tell their story, to put it into context for you.
When we get to the exhibit, what are we going to see?
This exhibit is going to come off the walls, so to speak, at Delta. There will be an audio-visual component to the photographs, and some of the folks that will be featured will have artifacts there as well as the photography. Sam McMillan will be featured. He's locally and affectionately known as Sam the Dot Man, and you'll be able to see some of his work in this exhibit. There'll be music, sound, video. It'll be a really immersive experience for folks who visit, and I think that they will really get a good sense of who these people are and their value. There's a soundtrack to the exhibit in addition to the videos that will be reeling during your time there. You'll get to hear these men speak and sing, and we really want to celebrate them. There'll be opportunities for the community to take group tours. We'll also have workshops available for all age levels, exploring the photography, exploring the music, exploring the traditions of music making throughout the exhibit.
As we walk along and I hold a hand, even though we hardly speak, I'm a lucky man and he understands.
When you went into school, I mean, even in undergrad, were you already kind of taken up with this sort of folkloric study?
Since I was 16, I've been running around. You know, I was in Appalachia from New Haven, and 18, I was in Warren Wilson College for a semester and a half, and then a year up in the mountains, and then I was in Kenya, East Africa for 3.5 years studying music there, and then came back to North Carolina and got deep into the blues scene. But I grew up as a kid with a father was a great record collector and music enthusiast, so I had a really deep knowledge of country blues and blues and jazz and rock and roll and classical. I had a great music education as a kid.
Well, your journey took a big jump forward, at least in the blues realm, back in the, I guess, the late 80s with a meeting with a blues artist by the name of Guitar Gabriel.
Yeah, Guitar Gabriel and Winston-Salem. Guitar Gabriel, Captain Luke, J. Hugh Laurie, Mr. Q, Willa Mae Buckner, Guitar Red, we're all right there in the drink house scene right there, right out of town, Preston Folk, and it was an amazing thing.
I've got the key to the highway, building down in, out to go. I'm gonna leave this time, Claire, I won't be back no more.
When I met Gabe, it was that scene in Winston, it was just thriving. You know, Gabe was an incredible musician. They didn't have a way to get out or a voice or any way to get their music heard. And Gabe told me when I met him there in Piedmont Circle, first thing he said, I know where you want to go. I've been there before. I can take you there. When I die, bury me with my guitar. And he promised me that, and that was the deal. And we put out a cassette, and within 6 months, I think we played Europe, and within a year, we played Lincoln Center, we played Carnegie Hall, we traveled all throughout Europe, went to Switzerland and France and Germany and Belgium and Italy, throughout the United States, Vancouver. Really an incredible story, and on our time off, he introduced me to all these wonderful artists, and you know, through Gabe, the record that I made with Guitar Gabriel and, you know, people like Eric Clapton would come to visit me. Or it was really great music. It was as good as it gets, good as Lightning Hopkins. It, you know, listen to the records. He was an amazing guy. And then Captain Luke, you know, he just passed away. Just an incredible record. And he went on to find Cool John Ferguson, who was acknowledged as one of the great masters of electric guitar that no one knew of before. Right in Winston.
I want to talk a little bit about this notion of, if not Piedmont blues, Toots blues.
It was on the move. Gabe asked him what blues was, and he had some great lines. I could find lines from you, but he said blues is a spirit, you know, it's a spirit, and it will never die, and it's something that gives you uplift and takes your worries away, helps you communicate with people, something that's within you that can get out of you, and it's Piedmont blues and Chicago blues, but we call our music the Toots blues because it's blues is on the move. It's saying something, expressing your way of life, expressing who you are, and what it's all about. You know, that's ripping on Gabe, my memories of him.
I love the way he said that, because it for me, gets at the essence of, for me as a listener, somebody sitting in the audience, when I'm really feeling it in that blues context, it's a great communicator, great storyteller within the context of fantastic playing, and he seems so natural.
Yeah, and he could do that when I met him, though. He would write songs kind of like, I imagine, Lightning. He knew about the postman that was coming, about, you know, what happened the night before, the people in the neighborhood. He would just be improvising these songs right on the spot. It's just amazing. That's why they're called bards. That's who they are. You know, after emancipation, these guys had guitars and had freedom of movement for the first time since, you know, slavery ended, and you're free to go on a train, and you have these guys like Gabe that had a guitar that could eloquently tell everybody in the world what they experienced, or what you're going to experience when you go somewhere. What are you going to find out? I mean, what happened to him? What's happening now? These were very important people in the community. And when I ran across them in Winston, they're still very important people in the community.
Well, you mentioned Gabriel had long been inactive, you know, when you hooked up in the music industry.
Yeah.
Since the 70s. This is unfortunately not an uncommon thing, either in the blues or in the jazz world. You decided to do something about that situation.
Well, that's the thing. There's the music business is a very tough industry. In America, it's really built for the kids, and we eat up our young with these pop stars, and it's all about selling records and selling seats, and it's very, very difficult, you know, even at the best guys, to make it. And so a lot of people fall off the radar and can't make a living, or even when they're out making a living, they're really just making enough to pay their hotel and gas and bus fare to the next place. And when records are made, there was no real true understanding or partnership. Maybe it's just a small fly-by-night label, and maybe he sold 1,000 copies or a few thousand copies, and yeah, he took all the money and never paid the royalties. And even if he did get paid, it probably wouldn't be that much money, but there was no true understanding, and so people get bitter about it. And that's what Guitar Gabriel, he had a, you know, a couple of hits. Freddie King recorded Welfare Blues, Let No Woman. I mean, they had some wonderful songs, very powerful record. I've met people he could probably, at times it switched, it was after the folk movement, probably could have got a deal with Atlantic. It didn't happen. He didn't have a phone. And he just got disgusted and came back home and ran Drink House in Winston and didn't even try to go out again till I met him. Gabe sat down and said, I want to manage, we're going to do a record, and we had to come an agreement. And the agreement was, if you screw me, I'm going to shoot you.
Mm.
And that was a real simple agreement, and I took it to heart, and we had a great partnership, you know, and did a lot of great things together.
And don't let no woman mess up my mind. Woman mess of mine, I ain't gonna let no woman just mess up my mind.
After the gentleman by the name of Levinson heard about your field recordings, that eventually results in this incorporation of Music Maker Relief Foundation. But can you walk me through that?
Mark Levinson is from New Haven, Connecticut area. I kind of grew up with him. Mark Levinson is one of the great audio pioneers. You know, after Macintosh and all these great early 50s and 60s, audio companies made some great work, and then the stuff started to slide down. Mark designed like the soundboard for Woodstock, designed one of the first phono stages. He's one of the, like, an audio pioneer. You hear about him maybe in the Mark Levinson sound and Lexus cars. Every major mastering lab has his amplifiers. And my father was his lawyer, and at one time he helped win a case for him. And after my father died, I visited Mark in New York with a handful of my recordings. And he listened to the recordings, and he said, this is a rare opportunity, because he looked at my recording gear. I had a $35 microphone and a cassette recorder. And he said, I don't believe how good these sound, that you have transcended the medium of recording to make these absolutely stunning recordings with this terrible gear. I've sent people out with thousands and thousands of dollars worth of gear and not come back with stuff this good. it was so good because the artists were so great. It's what's in front of the microphone. And so he remastered all these recordings, and we went off to the Consumer Electronics Show and debuted all these recordings, and he came up with the name of Music Maker Relief Foundation and made a patron sampler. We sold for $100, and we raised $20,000 from the audiophile community that weekend. And that was the birth of me fundraising and raising money for these guys.
What a Rockefeller were
is a very interesting place, and it remains so. It's been a great inspiration for our country, for literature, religion, and music, through the great combination of the Indians that were here and the blacks and the whites. They've created this, in food ways, this great culture that kind of defines who we are as Americans in a lot of ways. And it still does to this day, and people still look towards the South for inspiration. That's what the Music Maker is important for, to better understand who we are as a nation by knowing these wonderful artists. And so that's what we're all about. And it kind of really started there, right in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That's, I had that epiphany for years, but, you know, it was to cross lines of race and social and economic scales, you know, and have young white kids from the middle class background and old black men and old black women and Indians and from different music traditions get together and try to make a difference, because faith can move mountains. We've come so far, but we've got a long way to go, and it's still a journey that our nation is on through all that stuff I just talked about. And then what do you want to do while you're here? That's what my wife and I have chosen, to try to make a difference and join in that journey that these guys have been through.
Oh, you know I want. What a loss. But now I'm found.
The exhibit, We Are the Music Makers Photography Exhibit at Delta Arts Center, is step one in that direction in terms of this region. I mean, you're really pushing on an open door for me in terms of the significance of specifically not just the South, but the Piedmont Triad region in terms of that crossroads, be it jazz, blues, you mentioned Native American music.
North Carolina is one of the most important musical states in our nation. We don't have the publicity. We don't work it as much as other people. But, you know, North Carolina is still, I would say, one of the most vibrant musical states we have. We're in the Holy Land for jazz. You know, we have, you know, John Coltrane and Thelonious Monk have come through here. You know, Bill McGraw and his Bluegrass Boys, they weren't from Kentucky. The Bluegrass Boys were all from North Carolina. James Brown Band was all from Greensboro, the Flames. From Winston-Salem, the birth of R&B.
The Five...
Five Royale.
Royale.
Think about the sacrifices that I made for you. Think of all the time.
People think of jazz, for example, they just go right to New Orleans, or they think of blues, maybe Chicago. But in terms of the branding of our state, and I don't want to simplify it at all, Tim, but maybe you could help me out here as to why there's that lack of fully embracing the uniqueness of this region musically on a whole scale level, where everyone's just aware of that.
I think because it's called church parking. You're in the Bible Belt. And early on, I can explain, Samuel Charters wrote a thing in the 50s that caught the nation, that the blues was from Mississippi, and it kind of stuck. And the story that's basically told is blues comes from Mississippi, went to Electric, and then went to London, then came back to us. You know, that's a story that's told, and it's an easily digestible story. And then now the state of Mississippi, through their economic development department, has done the Mississippi Blues Trail and put a lot of money behind it and have done very well. I don't know why in North Carolina we don't embrace I think the people here do, but from an outside, you know, we don't have the proactive stance of monetizing the great culture that we have here. It's something that we really need to assess, and we do. You know, Mississippi has 147 blues trail markers, state markers. I mean, we should be doing that in North Carolina for all the bluegrass and the old time and for the potters. And I mean, it's such an incredible, diverse state of rich tradition. Why we don't do it probably goes back to the haves and the have-nots.
Well, Tim Duffy, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to talk with me today. I sure appreciate it.
Oh, and thank you, Winston-Salem, for helping me start it all, and especially the people up and down Cleveland Avenue and that have been so kind, inviting me in their community and helping me start this. I really mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Wish you to be alive.
Award-winning musician, folklorist, music historian, and producer Timothy Duffy. Earlier we heard from Delta Arts Center Executive Director Nadia Quander. We Are the Music Makers photography exhibit is up at Delta July 7th through August 29th. The exhibit and all related events are free and open to the public. There'll be opportunities for young people to create traditional folk instruments there with non-traditional objects and to interact with local musicians. The opening reception featuring Music Maker co-founder Timothy Duffy's Artist Talk is Thursday, July 9th, and the Blues Review and Live Performance lineup on August 27th will be posted soon. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org. Just click on Triad Arts Weekend. Well, William Christenberry is a photographer whose work has always fascinated me. He's also one of the best storytellers I've ever met, and he'll be bringing his A-game next when Triad Arts Weekend continues after this oh-so-short break. Stick around. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and just about 10 minutes from now, Eddie Garcia and Bethany Chafin join me to share their Triad to-dos. I don't know what they've picked this week, they don't know what I've picked, and that's half the fun. The other half is that it's all good, and you get to pick for yourself which Triad to do makes it on your list this weekend. But first, we're off on a little country driving. For more than a half century, photographer William Christenberry has toured rural Alabama with his cameras, an old Brownie among them, capturing images of the landscape there. His work has been exhibited all over the world and domestically, from MoMA in New York to Rinalda House in Winston-Salem. It was there that I met Bill for a tour of his fascinating work from 1961 to 2005. Christenberry's photos of rusty, hand-painted signs from the 1940s, sculptures done by hand from his detailed memory of long abandoned rural churches sitting on wooden frames full of red soil. All of his work invites the viewer to celebrate each of the object's wondrous imperfections.
This was a building that I knew as a youth was a country store run by a great uncle. And then when he gave it up, probably because of age, some gypsies came through the county and they rented this building to tell fortune, the Reed Palms. And one day over time, I go there and the gypsies had skipped the country. Somebody just put that hand, see the word palmist is upside down there. They just put it in unintentionally upside down, made it more like an icon to me. And I have that exact sign in my studio. It's about this big, hangs on the wall, just like that.
It must be so nice to come home to images throughout your home and your studio that are so meaningful to you on a daily basis. What does it give you?
Well, I'm pleased that I actually have preserved some of the things, because when television came about, not just television, but primarily, outdoor advertising changed dramatically. So you don't see this kind of signage much anymore. Even some states or some places don't allow much signage put up along the roadway.
There are several examples of signage here in this exhibit, I should say, for listeners. And actually, the exact sign itself has been brought in. And it really is striking because there aren't any anymore. If you see something like that, it's for a lemonade stand or for a garage sale, and that's about it.
Right, and it's not there permanently. Now, this is one of my, if I have to choose or say that I have a favorite or favorites, Brownie Snapshots, 1971. This beautiful little country church near a community called Sprott, S-P-R-O-T-T, Alabama. And this was on actually a rare winter day, because we usually went home to visit parents in the summer. But for some reason, I was there on a winter day explaining that intensely blue sky. It was in the summer, the skies are usually much lighter blue because the sun is so intense. But those two towers, one was a bell tower, and the shadow cast. Look at the shadow. Isn't that beautiful?
It's rolling like a wave.
That's right. And I just love that church. So it now exists and has for many years as a sculpture. I built it. It's about facade this wide and about this high. And again, it sits on a platform that holds the real Alabama red earth, sifted of pine needles, other debris out. So it's just that resting there. And what else? Oh, here's another good one.
Oh, yes, I remember this one.
No hunting nor no trespassing. Painted on a, I would imagine that had been a kitchen countertop, formica, equivalent of that. And it, actually, the writing is quite beautiful to me.
It really is. It looks like a different language altogether, the way the characters are drawn. And it just, again, just nailed up against an old tree.
Right. Used to, you'd see a good, well, you'd see more of this. But now, I haven't appropriated a good sign in several years.
Yeah.
This piece, it's high memory. It's almost like time and the elements and the heat melted. And this is encaustic. This is wax on that surface.
I wondered what that was. This is one of Mr. Christenberry's buildings, and based on memory, and it almost has a dream state effect.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. Depending on how and where they're exhibited, sometimes a piece like this would be exhibited in a room by itself, so you'd have this sense of aloneness. I have some fascination, I don't want to say obsession, with the aloneness of things in the landscape. And you used to see much more of this kind of thing than you do now, but what you see now in the landscape are mobile homes, trailers. Maybe to another generation of artists they'll be interesting, but not to me. And there's Kudzu in the winter, you know, where we saw the Parmesan. That's the back of the building. Here it is, two frontal views, one summer, one winter. The rear of it with an old Sinclair gasoline sign put in there to cover up a hole. And then one year, finally, after many years, I get there. What is this?
1981.
In 88.
It disappeared.
It's gone. They finally tore it down. But I was able to get the sign, the Palma sign, upside down before, legally, properly. Chinaberry tree, cedar tree, apple tree, and that's just where the building sat.
We were talking about not wallowing in the sentiment in the history of an area, but what was your feeling when you came back and it was gone?
Sadness, yeah. A touch of nostalgia, I won't deny that. I think you can wallow in nostalgia, but I hope in most of my work there's a sense of, not nostalgia, but strong, intense feeling for time and time passing. Time passing. The majority of what we're looking at here is gone. This is Kudzu, see, in the winter. Where do we see when it's so, in the summer it's just rampant with growth when the heat comes. But here it is in the winter. This is not a flaw in my print, that's a bird. And there's a legend here, a story here. There's a road, country road here, paved, small country road. And one night, a gentleman who had too much to drink in his old T model or A model car came around a curve in that road and ran off down in there. They didn't find his skeleton or his car for years. It just disappeared. See, that's the wall of the other side of the ravine.
And the Kudzu discovered him over and they never found him.
I was working there on a summer day. We have any summer Kudzu? I thought so, somewhere. Because it's oh, there it is, behind that lady. That's rampant. That's, yeah. But I was working, setting up the camera one day. This is the big camera, the 8x10, you know, the tripod and getting the camera on there and getting everything correct for the exposure. And Kudzu's all along here, and I feel something wrapping around my leg. And I thought, can't be a snake. It was Kudzu growing around my leg.
The photographer William Christenberry's latest show is at Hemp Hill in Washington, D.C., and it'll remain on display for Triad vacationers Tuesdays through Saturdays, 10 to 5, through August 1st. You'll find links to more information and images of Christenberry's work at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend.
I love that theme music. What is that theme song?
That's the song Regret by the band St. Vincent, who's led by guitarist, singer, extraordinaire, Andy Clark.
Oh, yeah.
Who you just saw, right?
Yes, in Charlotte. Literally one of the best shows I've ever been to in my 36 years.
You've been to a lot of shows.
I've been to a lot.
Yeah, and you can lay down some pretty nitty-gritty guitar licks yourself, so that's a high praise.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to dive in with my Triad to-dos first, if you don't mind. I'm so excited.
All right. This just
happened yesterday. Well, two things happened yesterday. First off, you know, there's so much going on here that occasionally I want to throw out stuff to put people, so people can put it on their calendars in advance and not let it blow by like I have so many times. First one, John Coltrane International Jazz and Blues Festival comes up in September 5th. Mm-hmm. They just announced their lineup. And you know me, I'm a huge Marcus Miller fan, a bass player extraordinaire, played with Luther, played with David Sanborn, played with everybody. I mean, amazing funk jazz player is one of the headliners this year.
Whoa.
And David Sanborn is going to be there.
Really?
So yeah, this festival, it's...
That's huge, at High Point.
Yeah, at High Point. Who knew?
Wow.
I mean, it's not traditional straight ahead jazz for the purists out there. Just great jazz players. Those guys are solid musicians. It's going to be killer. So that David Sanborn and Marcus Miller, among many others, at the John Coltrane International Jazz and Blues Festival coming up. And I had the great pleasure yesterday of sitting down with Rhiannon Giddens was in town. She just announced she's going to be one of the performers at the 75th National Folk Festival in Greensboro this year. Coming to Greensboro, which is a huge coup for the city.
Yeah.
Downtown. Wow. It's going to be a great festival.
And that's September as well.
That's right. Another September one. September 11th is when it kicks off.
September's going to be a huge month for festivals. It's like going to be
April all over
again. Yeah, I mean, you've also got bookmarks coming up in September.
And outside the area, but the Hopscotch Music Festival in Raleigh is September as well.
Oh, that's huge.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, this is great. People do need to start planning.
Put it on your calendar.
So everyone in the future, start taking off of your job from April and September, okay?
Right. We're going to crush the economy. All right, Eddie, what do you got?
So what I have is a Winston-Salem band who is celebrating an EP release this weekend. EP means kind of, you know, a shorter release. The band is called Spirit System. They're led by wife and husband Lori and Eric Gilstrap. The EP is called After Bloom, and it's being released as a warm-up of sorts to their full length. That's going to come out later this year.
Huh.
They've been making music together as a couple in various bands in North Carolina for years. They used to be Charlotte-based. They moved to the Winston-Salem area a couple years ago. Spirit System definitely makes decidedly dark psychedelic music. You can definitely hear traces of bands like The Cure and Bauhaus and that kind of like dark 80s vibe, but their sound is their own, and they have really pretty catchy vocal hooks and delivery and crazy guitar layering on top of it. I thought maybe we'd give it a quick listen, give you guys a chance what it sounds like, and listeners as well.
Sounds awesome. He sounded like a bass baritone version of Brian Ferry in a sense.
It's true. Eric is a great singer, and the music itself just sonically is striking. But the first time I saw them, I was like, whoa, that guy's voice. That's something you don't hear all the time.
Gorgeous voice. Really present.
Yeah.
Neat.
That's great.
Yeah, so that's Friday, June 26th at the Luna Lounge and Tiki Bar, which is downtown Winston-Salem on the corner of 7th and Trade, across from the garage.
Cool.
So, Bethany, what do you have this week?
Well, first, I want to ask you guys a question. This relates to what I have to present. Have either of you seen Silver Linings Playbook?
I have.
It came out in 2012. Jennifer Lawrence was in it. Bradley Cooper. It was based on a book by the author Matthew Quick.
I heard about that. I didn't see it. No.
Yeah, it was great. And, Matthew Quick, his newest book, is now out. And he's going to be here in Winston. He's going to be at Barnes & Noble on Tuesday, June 30th at 7 p.m. And he's going to be talking about his new novel, which is called Love May Fail. And so this sounds like a great opportunity to meet him, to maybe pick his brain. It's a free event. And this new book sounds like it's got got some crazy, wacky characters. You know, the description is there's a sassy nun, an ex-heroin addict, a metalhead boy, and a hoarder mother. And those are all the side characters. Those aren't even your protagonists.
All right.
So I recommend maybe checking that out and getting to know a little bit more about Matthew Quick, who's behind so many good, but well,
well, yes. I mean, Silver Linings Playbook had a lot of interesting characters and the sounds.
Exactly. Exactly. Kind of, and Sony's already has the rights to make a film out of it.
Oh, they're so all over that. My curiosity has been piqued, but I take issue with the title because I believe that true love can never fail.
Well, apparently, this
David
is,
Ford.
I don't know whether I can defend it after that, but apparently this is part of a Vonnegut quote. Vonnegut is a big influence.
I'm not
going to
argue with Vonnegut. Okay, you win.
But I will let you hold your opinion as well.
Thank you.
All right, that's Try It to Do for this week. Thanks, everyone.
Well, that's all for today's show. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia, and our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. You'll find podcasts on our website, wfdd.org. Click on Triad Arts Weekend, and you're good to go. Follow us on Twitter at Triad Arts Speak. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. You can send your guest ideas via our online submission page, wfdd.org. Click on Triad Arts. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.